Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Friday, January 30th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
DeCaria. Dockstader.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Excused.
Oh. Perkins.
Excused.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions.
Here.
Townsend.
Here.
Vasey.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Hines.
Here.
DeCaria. 30 present.
Prayer by Father Crunkleton.
Let's pray. Heavenly Father, as this week draws to a close, and so does the third week of the session, we thank you for what we have been able to accomplish thus far. Give us a productive day so that we can accomplish even more. When the battle sounds today and we are adjourned until Monday, let us look back on what we have done with satisfaction that we have done all that we could. Pope John the 23rd is reported to pray at the end of each day, "I have done all I could accomplish today, Lord. I'm tired and I'm going to bed." It's now in your hands. May this be our prayer too. Grant us a restful weekend. Those of us on the road, safe travel. May we return to our camps on Monday refreshed and renewed. We ask this through Christ our Lord.
Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, and approval of the journal.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 29th, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the Day is Lisa Brandis, M.D. from Cheyenne. Nurse for the Day, Brenda Burnett, RN, MSN, Wyoming State Board of Nursing. Thought for the day, success is getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you get. House bills and first reading. Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, may I make an announcement today?
Certainly.
This is that Pink Ribbon Day for Breast Cancer will be Monday. So I would encourage everyone in here to wear something pink. And I just want to give you a heads up on Friday so that you can adjust your wardrobe to be wearing pink on Monday for a presentation for breast cancer awareness. Thank you.
Thank you. House Bill 149, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 149, sponsored by Representative Gingery, Notaries, an act relating to notaries. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 51, noes 0.
House Bill 149 is referred to committee number one, Judiciary. House Bill 16, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 116, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Cottage Food Industry, and Act Relating to Food Safety. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 16 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 110, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 110, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, Wyoming Business Ready Community Program, and Act Relating to Economic Development. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 5.
House Bill 110 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 92, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 92, sponsored by Representative Landon, Long-Term Care Partnership Program, and Act Relating to Medicaid. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, noes 1.
House Bill 92 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
January the 30th, 2009, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 4, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 32, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senator Massey, Meyer, Peterson, Townsend, no, Senator Nicholas, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Senate File 21, second reading of the Senate File.
Subdivisions located within irrigation districts.
There are amendments. Reading clerk, read in the amendment number one. Second reading amendment number one, please.
Senate File Number 21, second reading amendment number one, page 2, line 12.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, if the Senate will recall the discussion in Committee of the Whole, we talked about some of the problems you can get into with these subdivisions and how that there would be some ways where if you've got a ditch running through a subdivision that's newly created, there are some potential for liabilities and problems. And so what this does is it adds to the things, the land served by the irrigation district. It adds lands where the ditch crosses it, because creating a subdivision in those circumstances can create some liabilities and some problems. So they ought to be included as well. I would urge the adoption of the amendment.
You've heard the discussion. The question is, shall Senate Amendment Number 1, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 21 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion amendment passed. Second amendment, reading clerk, please read it in.
Senate File 21, second reading amendment number 2, page 1, line 2.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 21. Members of the Senate, we had some very good discussion yesterday about property rights and trying to work out some language that would do what I think the bill intended to do for irrigation districts relative to subdivisions. And my colleague from Albany County had some good points, and you see his name on the amendment. This is a compromise, I think, to try to do what the bill originally intended to do. And if you look at the language, Mr. President, we're just saying that the application shall indicate the location of recorded easements, so the subdivider and the irrigation district both have out in front of the county commissioners where exactly these easements are, what they mean, and what the impact of them might be. I think that's very important, and it's really what we're trying to get to in the bill. Also, Mr. President, if you look at subsection G, there was some discussion about the liability, and I think this language is some language that makes it better, and it really gets to the point of what we're trying to do, and that's be responsible in how we deal with irrigation districts. Mr. President, I would ask that you look on line 27 of the amendment. We also added on an unorganized ditch. And Mr. President, the purpose of that is the previous second reading amendment by the good senator from Natrona County added that into the language in the bill, so we've added that here in terms of the liability section. I would ask for your favorable consideration and be glad to answer any questions.
Discussion on the amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate file 21, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate file 34, second reading of the bill.
Beginning Agriculture Producer Finance Authority.
Senate file 34, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate file 38, second reading of the bill.
Senate file number 38, Real ID Compliance.
Senate file 38, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate file 88, second reading of the bill.
Required use of ignition interlock devices.
Senate file 88, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill, excuse me, okay, Senator Nicholas.
No.
Senator Perkins, excuse me.
Thank you for the compliment. I consider that to be a compliment, but I'm mistaken for that, for my good friend from Laramie. Mr. President, there was a question asked of me after debate yesterday, and this, if I could report back with some information. I was asked about some of the locations and where you can currently find ignition interlock, certified ignition interlock installers in the state of Wyoming. I contacted our friends at the Department of Transportation, and the Director of Support Services, the Administrator of Support Services, wrote back two things. That currently there are installers located in Casper, Cheyenne, Cody, Gillette, Jackson, Lander, Laramie, Rollins, Riverton, Rock Springs, Sheridan, and Torrington. That changes daily, and there is also there's a website on the Department of Transportation's website under Driver Services. There's also a place where you can go and find information how to be referred to a certified installer of an ignition interlock device. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senate file 88, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate file 103, third reading of the bill, second reading of the bill.
Child abuse and neglect amendments.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate file 103, second reading amendment number 1, page 4, line 8.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 103. These are the corrections that we talked about yesterday, changing in that paragraph shall to a may, and correcting a typo of to an or, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate file 103, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bill's in third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent letter?
Mr. President, we do have a third reading consent list. That list is as follows. Senate File 23, Accelerated Nursing Degree Loan Repayment Program. Senate File 26, Voter Registration Deadline. Senate File 63, Text Messages While Driving Prohibited. Senate File 94, Campaign Finance Reporting Election Periods. Senate File 102, County Officials Salaries. Senate File 14, Animal Control. Senate File 115, Investment of State Funds Revision. Senate File 117, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Eligibility. And Senate File 130, Child Abuse Penalties.
Consent list today is Senator Burns.
Mr. President, the Majority Floor Leader, I believe, misspoke on Senate File 114. He called it Senate File 14.
Thank you for that correction. Mr. President, Senate File 114, Animal Control.
The consent list is Senate File 23, Accelerated Nursing Degree Loan Repayment Program, Senate File 26, Voter Registration Deadline, Senate File 63, Text Messages While Driving Prohibited, Senate File 94, Campaign Finance Reporting Election Periods, Senate File 102, County Officials Salaries, Senate File 114, Animal Control, Senate File 115, Investment of State Funds Revisions, Senate File 117, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act Eligibility, Senate File 130, Child Abuse Penalties. Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 23, Senate File 26, Senate File 63, Senate File 94, Senate File 102, Senate File 114, Senate File 115, Senate File 117, Senate File 130. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross. Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 23, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 23, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 26, are there any changes? Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 26, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 63, are there any changes? Perkins, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Cooper, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no.
Johnson.
Johnson, aye to no.
Nicholas,
aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no.
Burns,
aye to no.
Schiffer,
aye to no.
Townsend, aye to no.
Case, aye to no. Martin, aye to no. DeCaria, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 63, 18 ayes, 12 noes. Senate File 94, are there any changes?
Basie,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 94, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 102, are there any changes? Schiffer, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Larson, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Case, aye to no. DeCaria,
aye to no.
Anderson, aye to no.
Nicholas,
aye to no. Bebout, aye to no.
Hines, aye to no.
President Hines, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 102, 20 ayes, 10 noes. Senate File 114, are there any changes? Larson, aye to no.
Case,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 114, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 115, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 115, 30 ayes. Senate File 117, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 117, 30 ayes. Senate File 130, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 130, 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 23, Senate File 26, Senate File 63, Senate File 94, Senate File 102, Senate File 114, Senate File 115, Senate File 117, and Senate File 130 have passed the Senate. Considerations of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Considerations of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Bebout.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 92. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 92, sponsored by Senator Martin, Long-Term Care Access, an act relating to the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
I got to read the... It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Now you've heard a reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I'll repeat with the microphone on for recording purposes. When the Committee of the Whole writes a report, I move that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 92. Ask that further reading of the bill be dispensed with. And, Mr. Chairman, I would move that Standing Committee would like to have Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 read in at this time.
Senate File 92, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and at the proper time we'll discuss that. To discuss the bill, I would like to call on the sponsor, Senator Martin.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Aging and Disability Resource Center pilot project was established through a grant from the University of Wyoming. The pilot project funded the Aging and Disability Resource Center in Casper, which opened August 1st, 2006, and satellite offices in Glen Rock and in Douglas. These offices have served since that time a total population of close to 85,000 people in the two counties. The ADRC provides a no-wrong-door process for the citizens of Wyoming to be educated on long-term care options, and provides a simplified system of assessment, referral, and enrollment in appropriate long-term care programs. The staff of a successful ADRC must have a working knowledge of all long-term care services, as well as a basic understanding of many other non-long-term care services. Some of these services include Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, nursing home transition and diversion, consumer-directed care, nursing homes and assisted living, Medicaid waivers, DFS, public health, vocational rehabilitation, and independent living. Consumers who are contacting the Resource Center have access not only to the long-term care information and benefits counseling, Mr. Chairman, but also assistance with applications and paperwork if necessary. And Resource Center staff can make appropriate referrals when completed paperwork to other service agencies. Mr. Chairman, since the opening of the Resource Center in Casper, they have assisted over 1,200 citizens and professionals, and with 442 of those were consumers who had experienced significant challenges in obtaining Social Security benefits or gaining access to long-term care services. 110 consumers, or 25%, were referred to the Resource Center to home and community-based services, and some were in crisis situations. Several presented with life and death scenarios. 41 individuals were referred to Project Out, and that's the state's Nursing Home Transition and Diversion Program, and 21 became Project Out Diversion clients. Those 21 diversions have the potential to save the state Medicaid program approximately $377,000 over the first 12 months compared to the cost of nursing home care. Many referrals were made to the Wyoming Independent Living Rehabilitation for additional independent living services, and many others presented with issues requiring or relating to Medicaid Part D. The Medicaid waiver programs, home health care, housing, and many other topics, Mr. Chairman. With that explanation of the ADRC, I'd like to quickly walk through the bill.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, lines 10, section 1, we create Wyoming Statute 426109, Aging and Disability Resource Centers. Page 1, lines 14 through 16, subsection A, states the Department of Health is to use competitive grants and contracts to fund a network of 7 aging and disability resource centers in the state. That would be the 2 pilot projects and 5 additional centers here in the state. Page 2, lines 2 through 7, subsection B, states that the Department of Health Aging Division will consider the level of local support by the provision of a physical facility for a center or the contribution of any local funds or both. Page 2, lines 9 through 19, subsection C, outlines or defines the purpose of the aging and disability resource centers. Page 2, lines 21 through 24, subsection D, states that the department may amend to the extent required the state plan for medical assistance and services that was developed pursuant to Wyoming Statute 424104, subsection A, paragraph Romanette 2 little I, to provide for the Aging and Disability Resource Center network. Page 3, lines 2 and 3, subsection E, allows the department to adopt rules and regulations to implement this section. And finally, page 3, lines 5 through 18, section 2, is an appropriation for $425,000 from the general fund to the Department of Health for the purpose of establishing aging and disability resource centers pursuant to 426109, which would be created by this act. And, Mr. Chairman, the effective date is July 1 of 2009. At this time, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions, or we could proceed to the standing committee amendment number 1.
Any questions of Senator Martin? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not have a question, but I did move the amendment, and I'd like to discuss the amendment at this time.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment, what I will do is quickly go over that.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to discuss the amendment that we're speaking of that I did move.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment, the committee kind of liked the program. I think it's probably a good program. But you did hear testimony here, and we heard a lot of it in committee, that it should save the Department of Health $375,000 in their Medicaid program. It is our belief that it is a good program, that it is that it should probably be done. So what our amendment did was just to transfer from the Department of Health, where you heard there was going to be a savings of $375,000, that be transferred to the Division of Aging to enable this program to be set up, and further it deleted the automatic rollover into the next standard budget. It is a new program, and we think should be justified before committee number 2 instead of just being rolled over. So I did move the amendment and ask that the amendment be voted on at this time and ask you to vote aye.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 92, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We have a second reading amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Senate File Number 92, Second Reading Amendment Number 2. Delete the first Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Second Reading Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 92. The Chairman just described that the department testified that this is a program that they would like to do. They felt that there was enough money in their existing aging budgets that they could utilize the existing dollars to run the program. And in the last amendment, what you saw is the recognizing that the previous amendment directed that dollars be transferred from one program to another, which in essence restricts the use of the monies for its original purpose, mandates that it be used for this new purpose. What we've done is essentially delete the appropriations entirely. Now, the purpose for that is to really to give the department more flexibility. If the department wants to fund the program, and they testified they do, then they have the resources in their existing budgets, and they be 11 the dollars. They might be 11 more than 425. They might develop or be 11 less than that. And I think the committee's view of it, the Appropriations Committee, is to begin to take off the handcuffs of the department a little bit to say, we're not going to compartmentalize each and every appropriation to tell you exactly what to do. Rather, what we're going to do is if you tell us, department, that you're going to fund the program and you have the resources, we take you at your word. We expect you to determine after we leave here what the appropriate amount is for transfer and whether you want to start one of these or two of them or three of them. It gives them more flexibility. By giving them more flexibility, we also will insist on more accountability at the end. But, folks, as we begin to try to give the department more responsibility and flexibility to operate their budget within the appropriations we've given them, you need to give them some of the tools. And one of the tools is that we don't put everything in a silo and say you can only use it for this purpose. So we thought the bill was an innovative way to give the department more tools to regulate their dollars. The testimony was that they believe by having these aging and disability resources centers that they could counsel potential clients and folks into a least cost of care that would be better for the family and save the state money. And they thought they could pay from their existing budget. We say, fine, go ahead and do that, but we're not going to direct and tell you exactly what to do and how to do it. Rather, just leave it up to the department to use their best judgment.
Further discussion, Senator Larson.
I support the amendment. The reason we did it the way we did it is because that's what the testimony said, is that the savings was going to come out of that program, and if the savings was going to come out of there, we thought it appropriate. By the creation of the program, we thought it appropriate that's where the money come from, if that's where the savings was coming from. This is probably a better way to do it, and I support the amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I do get a little lost sometimes in the intricacies of the budgeting here. Am I right in understanding with the committee number 2 amendment that we're discussing now, the health department would be able to take the money out of virtually any of its programs, wouldn't be restricted just to Division of Aging, which is what if we don't pass this amendment, what I understand will be happening. And so this one is a great deal more flexibility, and they could with this take it out of the Medicaid budget if they thought there was going to be enough savings there to justify it. Is that a correct understanding of what this amendment does?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, that is a correct understanding. They're not restricted any particular source from where to fund it. And the only restriction is they would have to use the B-11 process, which requires the approval of the governor.
Senator Scott.
I support this amendment, too. I think this is an innovative way to get this project funded. We've got the one in my district that's already going. It is proving to be useful. It does reduce the demands on your nursing home program because it gives people a lot better knowledge of what their non-nursing home options are, so there are some potential savings. I just hope that we adopt this amendment and this approach to this program, they go ahead and do it, they don't get criticized next year for having done it. I hope our collective memories are long enough to understand what's going on and why what we've authorized here.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After having a discussion with the good chairman from Appropriations, I felt much better about the amendment that they had proposed. I would ask for your support of this amendment. The thing that we may want to look at in the future or in a future reading is actually require them to come back and give a report to the Appropriations Committee, and that may be an amendment that needs to be drafted and brought up in one of the next two readings. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called for. All in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion that Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 92 pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious about a bill like this. I guess the first question I have is, why 7 centers? Why not 5? Why not 9? Why not 8? I don't know why. What's so magical about the number 7? And while we're on it, why we're restricting it, frankly, to physical centers, physical places, and then there's language down here about locations and physical facilities for the center and so forth. And what I don't quite understand is we've got a very good system of senior centers around this state. And with the information technology we have anymore, I don't understand why this can't be done on a revolving or rotating motion with having some people who can rove at different places and spend an afternoon or a couple of days at the various senior centers giving out this advice. And my understanding is that's what this is a place that seniors can go to get advice about senior care and long-term care. And I don't understand why a storefront or whatever it is has to necessarily be open.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, those are great questions, and those are exact questions that caused us to, in part, to recommend the last amendment that was adopted. The question is, why not use resources that are already out there? The testimony was some senior centers have qualified people who can perform these functions, give the advice as necessary to counsel folks. Others don't. Some are just simply there for camaraderie to provide meals, and they don't have a level of skill to provide this kind of advice. How the department gets there is really going to be up to them. It did occur there was testimony and suggestion that perhaps all they have to do, the department needs to do, is develop some training system at the department level where they go out and train folks at senior centers to provide this. If you turn over to page 1, it provides that the department is authorized to use these grants if they want to. It's not a mandate. And in effect, what we've done is given them one more tool, one more arrow for their quiver to go out and do it. How they accomplish it is really going to be up to them. And I agree with our colleague from Sheridan that in many instances they might simply be able to go out and get senior centers and counsel and train them, but they've got the budget. We would hope that they would use the most cost-effective way to get the job done.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I commend the sponsors of the bill. I think it's a great idea. I I think the comments from the senator from Sheridan are very apropos, and I hope that when you look at the bill on pages 4 and 5 of page 2, where it talks about the division shall consider the degree of local community support for a center by the provision of a physical facility for the center, that I hope that that's what that means, that they'll attempt to co-locate with existing facilities, whether they be senior centers or other places. And I think that those are very good points. And I guess the one thing I look at this is, when you look at the value of what this potentially brings and what the cost that we have, you've got a number of disability waivers, DD waivers that are out there. Some of the stuff we've seen, children are about 16,000 a year per waiver. Adults with brain damage are about 60-some thousand. Adults with developmentally disabilities are about 32,000 a year. The average cost of a nursing home in the state of Wyoming is about $6,000 a month. So I commend the bringers of the sponsor of this bill, but I guess I'm just wondering, as you went through committee or as you visited with the department, I'm just wondering why we had to wait for this innovation to come from the good senators who brought it, because it's a great thing. It seems to me that ultimately those waivers, there's a point of entry that's already exists within the department, and I'm just wondering why this isn't being done already. It just would seem to me that this is something the department should have been doing. I'm just wondering if there's any kind of testimony on that, because this is vital to conserving the resources that we have in the state.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, there are the pilot programs that have been in existence to see if it worked. Frankly, they thought it would work, and the reason it isn't being done statewide already was very simply funding. I think they did want to make sure that the program was going to prove itself. Please understand, this isn't just about going into a nursing home or going into helping those. It is something which I ask in committee. Any of you who are of the age that you have to get a drug program, a supplemental drug insurance for your Social Security, try to do that in a simple manner. And they send you this stuff every year. There's never been anything more confusing to a senior than trying to evaluate those drug programs every December. And even that kind of thing, these people are trained to help. They can show you what to hook up, which one will be the best for you. And there should be, not only to the individuals, but to the department, substantial savings right there. It is my belief from hearing testimony that they did believe in the program. We funded a couple of pilot programs. The pilot programs worked. Their testimony was that they will try to co-locate in most of these areas where they can do that. I think it's an effective program. Some people said, well, why don't we just use computers to do that? I'm sorry, but the age group this is serving, the computer's more confusing than is the problem they're trying to solve. I think it is an effective program that will provide substantial help to seniors. And it isn't just about advising them on things that will keep them out of a nursing home. It's all kinds of programs that the federal government has that are so doggone confusing that most seniors have a terrible time figuring them out. And I think it's a great program. I commend the sponsor for bringing it. Maybe should have been done sooner, but if not, let's move on with it now.
Senator Dockstader.
As I recall, members of the aging division move around the state. They come to the senior centers and work with the senior center staff and the management, so forth, make sure things are working right. And in respecting the good senator from Sheridan referencing the seven centers, why create new centers? Virtually all of our communities have some type of senior center situation. We may not have the people who are trained at those centers. But couldn't we're talking about saving $377,000 here and adjusting it, allowing them to use it how they want it. Why couldn't we, as that group travels around the state from the aging division and they come to these senior centers, why couldn't there be a program announced ahead of time, much like when the vet programs come into the town and say, we're here to help you? Why can't they be advertised ahead of time and say, we're going to be here at the senior center on these dates and we're going to help you with all of these problems, help you with aging and disability programs? The resources are coming to the communities. We already have the buildings in place. Why can't we use what we have in place, just get it a little better organized? Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on that particular point, you've got some practical problems you've got to deal with. You have, as was mentioned, a tremendous complexity in the range of programs that are available, not only federal, but some state funds-only ones that have been extraordinarily effective in this area. We get away from some of the silo restrictive mentality of the feds. We can do some things you have to do to get the job done. So it is a complex area. You do have a circumstance where typically what happens is there is a crisis and a family has to do something right now. And if you have some kind of a rotating group that comes around once a month or once every 2 weeks or something, you're likely to miss a fair amount of the need by not being available when the need is, because something goes wrong, somebody goes in the hospital, going to come out and have to have a place to go. You sometimes have to make decisions in a hurry. And I can tell you from experience in my own family that this is the sort of thing that happens, and people just don't know what the options are. You also, Mr. Chairman, have a circumstance where their clients are different from the clients of the senior centers. Yes, a lot of the clients are senior citizens, but they're also younger people with disability needs, people that have had a stroke, things like that, people that are not normally senior center clients. So you've got an outreach that's beyond the senior center as well. So it makes some sense to co-locate them, but they are different. You say that we're just strictly part of the senior center. You've almost told a good part of your potential clients, we are here to serve you. So that is important. And I think that you need this kind of legislation with the push to get the health department to do it and do it with the breadth that is in fact needed.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, not to belabor the point, this nation and this state has decided that the best thing that they can do is try to divert folks from going to nursing homes, to allow them either to age in their home or, if they have disabilities, to give them the ability to live in their home. They fare better. This program works because it is looking at a region. It's looking at a group of people, and those folks know that they're going to be in Casper Monday, Wednesday, Friday. They're going to be in Glen Rock and Douglas on Tuesday, Thursday type of situation. As far as utilizing the centers, a number of the centers would like to see the resource person within the center. They didn't want to hire somebody to take on that job and that training, but they see it as a benefit to have that resource person who is meeting with seniors. But as the good senator from Natrona County said, you're meeting with a whole different group too that aren't coming to that center. They may have brain injuries. They're younger and they're not participating. So with that, Mr. Chairman, unless there's some other questions, I would call for a question.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, there's only no vote in appropriations. I think I need to explain that a little bit. I think part of the reasons I voted no were brought out. Frankly, I just think this is another attempt to start a bureaucracy that probably isn't needed and is going to be duplicative. I think the senior centers already supply a lot of this information. I think with a little bit of training to some of the staff or some augmentation of some traveling staff, we could probably do that. It's not precluded with the way that JAC amended the bill because it's just authorization. But, you know, for the longest time, we've been trying to get some single entry points. We've got the Department of Family Service and Department of Labor. They're in one shop now where they were spread out all over the country and in different shops. And now with this particular bill, it could envision a group of people putting in a grant process to rent a storefront in the middle of some town on a vacant street and putting up a sign saying, this is your senior services entry point. Nobody knows where that's going to be, you know. So you're going to basically start a new little shop someplace, and nobody's know where any of the services are going to show up from. So, you know, I just look at it as that we're trying to reinvent the wheel, where all we really have to do is put a hubcap on the wheel, and that hubcap is just some training to some of the senior services people that are in the centers already, or some training to the Department of Health people that are already out there in the communities, or family service people that are already out there in the communities. There is literally a plethora of brochures and pamphlets that describe all of these different programs. All we need is somebody that understands the pamphlets to describe that to the people that are needing the services. And frankly, all that is a little education and communication. We don't need a whole new bureaucracy.
Senator Perkins.
Just hearkening back to the good senator from Sheridan, I haven't heard an answer to his question yet about why 7. And ultimately, when you take into consideration the senator from Albany County's comments, ultimately, why aren't we leaving this up to the department to determine that number and the number that there should be there, as opposed to saying you will do 7? I'm interested, again, in the good Sheridan from Sheridan County's question about why the number 7. Why not 8? Why not 9? Why not 5?
Senator Scott.
Chairman, we felt that there needed to be a number that was reasonable, would get coverage over the whole state. We're a little scared if we didn't have something like that, that the northern third of the state might be neglected.
Question. Senator Esquibel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with Wyoming being one of the leading states in numbers of percentage of aging population, you know, I think anything we can do to make that life better for our citizens, aging citizens, you know, I'm certainly in favor of. But the one question I had was on page 2, section C, line 9, where it talks about creating a single coordinated system of information access for all prisons seeking long-term care. I was wondering if this provision could be interpreted to mean that that these centers could do advocacy type services to make things maybe a little bit easier, such as in adult exploitation situations, or make things or recommend improvements in home health care. How to fund some of those type of programs. I was just wondering if that could be interpreted to go that far. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ready for the question on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that the committee hold rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 92, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. No. Senate File 92 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, in the balcony above, we have a distinguished set of constituents who have very patiently listened to the debate on aging, and I might also witness the process of aging as well. But, Chairman, in the gallery above, I have Mr. Terry Jones and Mr. Carlberg, along with a group of Wheatland Middle School student council members, and I wish that you might welcome them at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the Senate. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 111. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File Number 111, sponsored by Senator Schiffer, First Responder Retirement Contributions and Act Relating to Employee Retirement. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 111, First Responder Retirement Contributions. Mr. Chairman, this bill addresses the situation we have with our Army and Air Guard people. Mr. Chairman, our Army Guard is going to have the largest deployment in its history this year. It'll start, matter of fact, it's already started, somewhere around 950 guard men and women are being deployed to the Far East, or I guess it's the Near East this time. In addition to that, the Air Guard is deploying, while they don't go for a 15-month deployment, they go at 60-day, 90-day, 120-day deployments, come back for 30 or 60 days, and deploy again. Some of these guardsmen are on their third, fourth, and fifth deployments right now. It appears the next deployment after this one will be to Korea, and that's out there a year, 18 months, whenever it happens. Given the level of our standing army and given the international commitments that we have, probably our National Guard, be it Air Force or Army, are going to be called on by the federal government to deploy regularly over in the foreseeable future. What this bill does is it puts the money and the system in place so that when these people deploy, the state pays for both the employer and the employee retirement contribution. A couple things I have in mind, and let me just give you an example. If you're a guardsman, the regular grunts are usually their E4s. They're going to make about $20,000 a year. That's what the Army pays them. They can contribute to their retirement out of their $20,000. Do most of them do it? Most of them can't afford it. Oftentimes, an employer may contribute, may not. What this does is says the state of Wyoming will make that contribution. A couple things that we want to do. One, it's a recognition of their service, but it's also a recognition of what these employers, they'll hold the job, they'll get by during these deployments and understand a 15-month deployment is a significant time span. But it seems to me we've got to recognize what they're doing, and that's why I've included the employers in this contribution. Currently, the state of Wyoming already does it for state employees. That program's been in place a number of years, and I what this does is expand it to what I term emergency service providers. Those are the EMTs, the firefighters, the policemen, nurses, those types of people. I picked them because they're the largest single category. If you want an employment category, out of that 950 men and women, they're the single largest category. The guts of the bill are on page 2, starting at the top, where it goes in. We're going to pay on line 4, public or private retirement system, both the employer and employee contribution. It goes on, we define for purpose of this subsection, first responder means those individuals who, in an early stage of an incident, are responsible for the protection and preservation of life, property, evidence, and the environment, including emergency response providers, as defined in Section 2 of the Homeland Security Act, and so on and so forth. That's who we're going after. It's roughly 156 individuals. There is an appropriation, that's Section 2. The appropriation is in two parts. The $996,078, that's the employer and employee retirement dollars, is what that amounts to. Over on page 3, starting on line 12, the total appropriation is the 996. The contribution is $789,000 and some dollars. There's also two employees down on line 19, and that's the people who are going to administer this program. Mr. Chairman, I included two employees because, understand, this gets a little bit complicated. The contribution starts the day of deployment, when the national call-up starts. You got to have somebody there that says, okay, now the state picks up the contribution. It ends the day that those men and women come back, particularly in the Air Guard. These medevac units and air controller units, they deploy frequently. They can deploy as much as 3 times a year, 30 days at a time, 60 days, whatever it is. In order to execute this program correctly, it's going to take a lot of miles, visiting with employers, making sure the contributions are there, making sure these people stay in good standing with their retirement system. Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions. As I said earlier, we do this already for state employees. We're picking up another sector of our men and women's retirement for those in uniform.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I just want to say that I strongly support this bill and I strongly support the appropriation. I do have a question, however, in regard to the two full-time positions. Mr. Chairman, we've had conversations with those folks in the retirement system in regard to their ability to manage that system appropriately, and we know some concerns that we've had in regard to fully funding that. In those conversations, retirement administration people have expressed a need for other full-time positions within the retirement system. The question that I have, and I understand that we need to support these military people for as long as it takes and for as much as it takes, but might these two full-time positions also help serve that department and other endeavors and some of the other concerns we have in regard to managing the whole retirement system? Or would these full-time people perhaps be withdrawn if, in fact, we can ever come home with these troops? But again, I would say we need to fund as long as it takes.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, these two positions are in the Adjutant General, the military department, and I don't know just how they'll split up the duties, but certainly one of these people, I'm trying to remember the exact number of the people being deployed in April. I think they come from, as I recall, 23 or 24 different communities around the state. One of these people is going to have to go out to each of those employers and say, all right, how's it structured? What do you, wherever we've got someone who's eligible under this program, and work it out with the employer. What is the retirement system? What's it look like? What's the contribution? The other one will be there when they actually deploy, make sure that everything's done right, that it starts that day. And conversely, when they come home, you're going to have somebody there as they debrief coming home from a deployment. So they are, these people are in a military department, and they're the ones that are going to have to make sure this works. If you promise somebody something, you got to make sure it works. And understand, while they're deployed, they're not going to have the ability to check on it or anything else. So it's got to be done. It's got to be done timely. done right. I will readily admit, you know, maybe we can do it with one. We don't know. It's easy when you got the state system. In other words, for state employees. I will tell you, I can tell you, there's no other state doing this. If there is, I couldn't find it. I didn't check all 50, but I asked around. We're cutting new ground on this. Whether two employees is right, well, it's not a guess, it's an educated guess is what it is, and I'm unfortunately the one that's educated, I guess. So that's what it is. We just don't know, but that's what we're going to try it with.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Chairman. For the sponsor here, I support this bill, too. I think it's a great bill and something we need to do, but I just, on page 3 to the good senator from KC, I was trying to understand that language up there at the top where it talks about this in lines 1 and 2, this appropriation shall be for the period beginning with effective date, blah, 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 June 30th, 2010. And then if you drop down there a couple of lines, it says on 6 and 7, unobligated funds remaining from this appropriation shall revert on June 30th, 2010. So I'm just a little bit confused there, but that's nothing new for me.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, in essence what that does, and we are isolating this account at least for right now to see how much of it we use, how successful it is. That's the end of the biennium. This appropriation folds into the Adjutant General's standard budget for the next biennium, but we wanted to track exactly how much we used, how successful we were being. So that's why it's siloed that way. Like any other account, whatever is left over, if there is any, reverts back to the general fund, and that's what that does. As it folds into the standard budget, and we have at least some experience, how much do we actually need to do this? I think we'll get a better idea of what's actually needed. And so that's why it's separated out in that fashion, just to track how much we need.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, as we began down this path, you have to recognize that it's not going to stop here. This is going to be a very expensive program. The sponsor of the bill, and I mean nobody wants to say that we do not support our servicemen, and we understand the great sacrifices they make. But remember, when it is true that for state employees, when they when they're on active duty, we continue to contribute to their retirement. That helps them continue to advance towards the rule of 85. The dollars are essentially built in our budgets, and it's something that we do for our own employees. This is a very narrow bill, talking about a very narrow group of our people, the folks that are being called up. And I submit to you, if it's good for them, it's good for everybody. Now, remember, when these folks are deployed, they're earning a federal retirement. So it's not as though they're not getting a retirement. They leave their job, their private sector job, they go to their federal service, and they are building a federal retirement in that area. Now, my assumption is that to the extent that these folks are county employees or with county entities, and if they're peace officers in the peace officers plan, you're talking about 18% of their salary. If they're a physician, they might be in a plan where when they're in the service, when they're called up, they're earning a physician rate of pay. If they're working for a hospital or a VA system in the state, they may be racking up eight. I don't know what they put aside, what the federal retirement is. So you're talking about paying those folks. If you're self-employed, you don't get anything under this plan. If you're making under this plan, if you happen to be, and it's very improbable, but just for example, you're making $200,000, we're going to make up whatever retirement is. If you have a private retirement, that if you're an attorney and you happen to be also a first responder, and in your law practice you're putting aside X amount of dollars, are we going to replace their 401k contribution? But I submit to you, if you, this is, once you begin saying that we are going to make up folks' retirements while they're on federal service, earning a federal service or federal retirement, you need to do it for everybody. And I don't know what the, you look at the fiscal note, it's just the beginning down that road, and it's very narrow. It, the only way to do it fairly is to expand it as people come in and said, I wasn't included. How do I get it? Can you contribute to my IRA? Can you, or since I can't, don't have a private, folks, what do we do? So it's a dangerous road to go down. It's a very expensive road to go down. These folks do have a federal retirement when they're gone.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Couple of comments. Yes, they're on federal retirement, but if they're what's called traditional guard employees and well, we call them the weekend warriors, they can't retire till they're 60, no matter when they put their 20 years in, and a lot of them will get out, so they won't have any retirement at all from the federal government. I applaud the committee for putting two in, because the Army Guard deploys for 15 months. This is their second deployment. They go over there and they stay, so they have one set of problems. The Air Guard is taking over 7 out of the 8 C-130s. They're going to go over for 2 or 3 months, come back for 2 or 3 months, go over for 2 or 3 months. So the problems will be completely different for the Air Guard than there will be the Army Guard. So with two people, we can have expertise in both areas, and it will better serve the families and those that are deployed.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill has, what I don't understand, it doesn't have a beginning date, so I assume that retroactive, anybody that's already deployed could probably apply for this. And then it is so narrow in emergency first responders that, as the good senator from Laramie said, you know, it should be open to everybody. I don't know why you would take a certain segment out of this group, out of the 900 or so we're going to send in April, or the people that are already there, and say only emergency responders. I would also ask the sponsor about federal funds, because the feds start picking everything up when somebody gets deployed. The cost, the wages, retirement benefits that were mentioned. So why couldn't federal funds be used to take care of the couple of positions? It may take a little work in the paperwork to make those two qualify, but since there's no sunset date on them, and page 3, line 8 says that this will become a regular part of the Adjutant General's standard budget, this will go on and on. As mentioned by someone else, the good senator from Glen Rock, I think, that said that we wouldn't, why don't we sunset out those dates? If the deployments aren't there, these jobs should go away. The other issue, there's no reporting in here, which is, I think, a very important thing. How many people qualified? How much money do we spend? It's going to become part of the standard budget. We should know that it's being spent appropriately and that a lot of people qualified, or this money's just sitting there. Even though it reverts, it still goes into standard budget, so in years ahead, it'll be there. I think it's way too narrow. I think just people being cut out of it. I do support the troops, so, you know, everybody has to say that, but it is really true. I don't think they should be financially hurt when they're deployed, but unfortunately there is some aspects of people making a whole lot more money than they'll make in Iraq. But this bill, I think, is too narrow. I think either include everybody and we'll bite the bullet should we decide to do that, or let's not get anything started on this.
Senator Schiffer.
First of all, in terms of the beginning date, it's the effective date of the act is when it starts. And this act, I've asked for it to become effective immediately, which will be in April. We can have it in place, I believe, in time for the April 15th deployment. In terms of dealing with professionals, doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, and they are covered. Unfortunately, they're some of the people who take the biggest financial hit to stay in the military, to deploy in terms of their salary, their earning ability. And unfortunately, they're also the people you want to make sure go on a deployment. You need them. These units need them. It is an encouragement to them, and they certainly fit within the definition of who is covered. I agree with my colleague from Albany County. This is expensive. Look at the price tag on it, just to cover that segment. Supporting a military is expensive. However, let me point out, in terms of actual cost, one guardsman costs about a sixth of what a regular soldier does. The federal government is getting quite a bargain by calling up the Wyoming National Guard and Air Guard. Reporting, in situations like this, reporting becomes a little bit problematic. I have no objection. If you want reports, we can generate them. The Lord knows the military can generate reports. I mean, we're talking about the pros now. But also, understand this. If you have a report, and I'm very receptive, I'll help you draft an amendment. A couple things I would suggest. You do not want to make any of the names nor the dates or anything like that in terms of a deployment public information. That's bad policy, and I hope you'll steer away from that. The second thing is the Appropriations Committee, that's their job, is to look at this account, say what was it, how much was spent, what was it spent for, all those kind of things. In my mind, that's the essential reporting, but I'd be glad to sit down and work out a report amendment if that's required. And again, Mr. Chairman, this is an expensive program, but supporting a National Guard that's really protecting us, I feel it's money well spent, and I think it's the encouragement that they need.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the comments that have been made so far are mostly all right on track. We are starting down the road. The road's going to be expensive. In my mind, unfortunately, that's a result of not having a sufficient national forces to do the jobs that have to be done. Why don't we do that? Because those above us, particularly Congress, have decided this is cheaper for the federal government to have these guard people being deployed all the time. I don't like that myself. I think if we're going to have it, we should try to not have these call-ups time after time after time. But it saves them money. Are they passing all the costs down to the state? Absolutely. We know it. They know it. And that's what's happening. But to be fair to the participants, and quite frankly, they're doing this still at a financial sacrifice with their redeployment. And not only, I may add, a financial sacrifice, but at a personal sacrifice. And to do anything less than try our best when we can to make them whole, I think is not the right thing to do. We are starting down the road. It will get more expensive, and I think you can count on that. But I think it's the right thing to do, as it will have to be expanded as we go on, unless there is a change in the federal government's approach. But I certainly do not want to say to those who are being deployed that Wyoming and this legislature isn't doing everything they can to stand fully behind them and try to make some of their sacrifice, both financial and personal, worth the cost. And I ask, urge you to pass it.
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a couple of comments related to page 2 on line 5 where it says, or pension plan systems, plans may be paid by the Wyoming Adjutant General. So my question to the sponsor would be, is the may in there because of because they may run out of money, may not have enough money? I mean, I don't know why the may, or why he should decide who gets it, if not, if they all qualify otherwise. And then on line 3 right above it, it says contributions to a public or private retirement system. Was there any discussion as to, you know, the state money going into private retirement systems? I realize it's a benefit for a deployed soldier, and I'm behind our volunteers on that. They put out a lot, and they're definitely going to get hurt on the financial end. But I don't know that, can we make a direct contribution to private companies, which is an investment for that company as they grow it to pay back the soldier when he's ready to retire? And I will refer back and comment on the good senator from Laramie who said that, you know, they are on some retirement system while they're deployed, and the federal government is picking up the tab for the rest. I really think the federal government can pay for those two positions, although I think two positions is a lot with computers today and all the records they have on these deployed soldiers, which would tell them where they work, what all the contact information is. All they'd have to do is email that in. The guy and the person on the computer at National Guard would email back and say, okay, give me your retirement plan numbers, blah, blah, blah. They'd see the pension system and cut checks for it. I mean, it really is not as simple as I just said it, but it's close to that. So two full-time people, and if they have to do any face-to-face, I wouldn't understand that at all. It's all electronic. So two seems like a lot, but I think the federal government could step in there too.
Senator Schiffer.
Great points, and let me walk through them. On page 2, line 5, the May, what this bill does is authorize the Adjutant General to start this program. I mean, that's what it does. That's why it's a May. He doesn't have the authority till we give it to him. In terms of payment to a retirement system, whether it's public or private, if you refer to Article 17 of our Constitution, we're obliged to support the militia. That's what this is. So it's constitutional. We're okay there. Irrespective of whether it's a public or a private, these folks are in what our Constitution calls the militia. Whether it's two people or not, again, I have almost unbound confidence in our Appropriations Committee that when they hold hearings with the Adjutant General, they'll have a better picture of the personnel that are needed. I don't know whether two is the right number, but one thing I do know, if we're going to start this, I want it done right. I don't want a halfway snafu sort of job. One, two, ten beats me. They tell me they need two. I went along with it.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation to Senate File 111, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That bill is passed. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 56. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 56, sponsored by the Education Committee, School Finance Appropriations, and Act Relating to School Finance. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
That when the committee of the whole rise the report and do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 56 and for an explanation of the bill, I turn it over to the Chairman of the Education Committee.
Senator Cole.
Senate File 56, this is one of the education bills that spends a little bit of money. Not like we can spend, but spends a little bit of money. It comes in and continues three specified off-model school district financial assistance programs. that we authorized before. And it's a result of Enrolled Act 45 from last year being original Senate File 70 from the 2008 session. It goes in specifically and addresses three programs, being food service augmentation, instructional facilitator augmentation, and the student enrichment pilot project. I'll walk you through the bill real quick, and then I'll go in and talk about these individual programs. Bottom of page 1, section 1101 of the session laws is where we start the student enrichment program. We funded that before to the tune of $450,000. This comes in and augments that again with another $450,000. On page 2, you see that before April 15th, the 2009 summer school program, that's when the application can be made by the districts. They get notified on May 1st if they're successful, and the money's distributed on May 31st of 2009 for the upcoming summer. I think it's important to read the underlying language on the bottom of page 3 on the student enrichment program. To continue supplemental assistance for student enrichment instruction in the 2009 summer school session and into the 2009-10 school year, an additional $450,000 is appropriated from the Public School Foundation program to the Department of Education for the period commencing on the effective date. There you see also on page 4, you see where the recipient districts have to report back to the Department of Education. And then you see on page 5 where the Department of Education reports back to the Joint Education Committee on or before December 1st of 2009 for the programs funded that summer. Section 2 starts the food service analysis, also part of Enrolled Act 45, Senate File 70. And the amount of assistance that was created there before was $4.5 million. We come back in this bill and augment that again to the tune of $4.5 million for the period beginning July 1st, 2009 and ending June 30th, 2010. Section 3 is where we get into the instructional facilitators part. $5,894,306 appropriated from the foundation program to the Department of Education to augment again the instructional facilitator program, which has been a very, very successful program. And it's I'm sure there's others that would like to comment on that. This is for the period beginning July 1st, 2009 and ending June 30th, 2010. Now to go to the student enrichment pilot project. The student enrichment pilot project has been established to provide student enrichment instruction programs to Wyoming students. The intention of this pilot project is to help students meet or exceed state and local standards in core academic subjects by offering a range of high-quality opportunities for academic enrichment that support student learning and youth development principles as well as reinforce complement regular academic programs. All the enrichment activities must be linked to academic standards. Programming must take place during non-school hours. The eligible applicants, Wyoming school districts demonstrating a high-quality plan for student enrichment instruction, and the target population is elementary, middle school, and high school students. Received roughly 50 applications, receiving for more than $2.5 million. The smallest request, $3,120, and the largest, $217,530. We awarded 9 grants at the bottom of this. If you look at this handout that you have, 9 grants, you can pick out your favorite district and see how you did. Created and implemented progress reports. Progress reports due October 1st, 2008, February 1st, 2009, and June 15th, 2009. Programs reimbursed monthly, $278,000 spent to date with $172,000 remaining. All data has to be submitted by October 1st of 2009 on the results of the program. The current progress report shows that 988 students were served from June to September. That pretty much talks about the student enrichment program. I will say that it was a very popular new program out there. It was deemed highly successful by school districts. The parents loved the program. Most of it took place in the summer. Students, teachers, and parents are also excited about the program. Now I'll go to the food service part. If you look in the handout that I distributed, You can see that the food service deficit amounts totaled $7.364 million. We chose, because of recalibration coming up, only to redo the funding of $4.5 million. If you notice this right here, you'll see where your individual districts shake out. $4.5 million. Just to follow up a little bit on how that was calculated, a task force was formed by the department to develop rules and regulations governing food service. The department designed a food service operations annual report to collect district program operations. The report was submitted to the department by districts on August 15th of 2008. The data collected from the annual report was compiled and used to provide technical assistance and training to school districts. We only actually had, I think it was two districts that actually operated in the black. The rest of them were in the red. The payments were calculated by the department and distributed to districts with the October 15, 2008 foundation payment. So the department came back and recommended that we do supplemental assistance to school districts for 2008-2009 to tune of $4.5 million. The instructional facilitator program was funded to the tune of about $16 million. What this 5.8 does is it comes in and augments that funding. Currently, there's 45 districts participating in year two, same as year one. We actually have three districts that aren't participating. High retention rate for the instructional facilitators. The instructional facilitators in Casper, for instance, in September had 250 participating. So if you look at the handout sheet that I have, $21.8 million out there, this $5.8 million comes in to augment the $16,350,000. That's the bill, and I'd be more than happy to try to answer questions.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas, Senator Ross.
Variance between the various districts that were awarded grants. What kind of things are they doing, actually, that enrich these students? I'm just kind of wondering if you could give us some sort of example of that.
Senator Coe?
Mr. Chair, the enrichment definition that was used in Senate File 70, learning opportunities and activities that engage students in developing essential skills, values and relationships as a vehicle for inspiring learning and encouraging academic and life success. The districts out there, there's nine of them that had the last grants: Albany 1, Campbell 1, Converse 2, Crook 1, Johnson 1, Laramie 1, Sheridan 1, Sheridan 2, and Uinta 6. Pretty much the popularity of the program was really out there. Kids enjoyed the learning environment they were in. It was a little bit different than the regular school. Parents enjoyed it. Teachers thought the program was very beneficial. They've actually seen some significant improvement in how these kids are performing that are participating in the program. So it's out there to enhance kids and make them do better in school.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to build upon that, these classes are held usually during the summer, but they could also be on weekends or after school hours. They're led by qualified teachers, certified teachers, and it allows those teachers more one-on-one time or small class time with a lot of students that are being challenged academically right now and falling behind. And sometimes that could even be gifted and talented students who are not challenged enough, who are bored, and are also falling behind in performance. It's not restricted to just them, but those are usually the students that are enrolled. And on the bottom of the handout, the lavender handout on bottom of page 3, there's almost 1,000 students have taken part in it. But some of the subject areas are career and vocational education, fine and performing arts, math, science, language arts, technology, health, physical education, and social studies. Most of the time, it's class period time. It's an opportunity for students to interact with the teacher, but they, especially in the summertime, go outside of the walls of the classroom and go out in the community or, say, especially with regard to natural science, go find a natural area and explore that. So the settings, because of the smaller class sizes, are also much more diverse. It's been 2 years and or 2 or 3 years in the making now. We've had two extensive evaluations, and the results are really quite encouraging up to this point.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I know we've had the instructional facilitators for several years now. My question is, do we have any good evidence yet as to how well they're doing? And I know they're very popular, and the schools, our school district likes them. Do we have any evidence as to results in terms of improved student performance?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and soon. Yes, we do have some indications that student performance has been increasing, and that has primarily come from the teachers who have received the assistance of these instructional facilitators. The instructional facilitators have worked very closely with a lot of these teachers, and when the teachers have time to do research as well as work with these instructional facilitators, it has very clearly and definitely, and there's good evidence, that they have changed their approach to teaching. And as a result of that changed approach to teaching, it's their belief that the students are performing better. Now, this is still fairly young in its development, and so the next step, and which started occurring at the end of last year, where two professors from the University of Wyoming are doing a statewide survey of these 45 districts that are employing them. They did their first round of site visits as well as talking with the teachers and the facilitators, and they need to do a second round to see what changes have occurred just over this school year, and that second round will be occurring in the spring of this year, 2009, and we expect a report either in the summer or early fall coming back to the Education Committee. And that report will focus much more on student performance as well as changes in teacher instructions than we've received up to this point.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just pulled up an email from last year. We had the same question as we were going over this last year. And I'm just doing this real quick. Some proficiency scores in our elementary schools in Copeville and Star Valley went from the mid-50 ranges in reading and writing and so forth up into the 90 percentiles, 81 percentiles, mid to upper 80s. So we made quite a significant jump in some of our, from 2006 to 2007, we almost doubled some of our proficiency scores, and they credit that to instructional facilitators. Thank you.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, just one more comment. You know, these programs are funded off-model, and for those who don't understand what off-model means, we fund districts with a block grant, has components of funding in it. Off-model means that these are funded specifically for these particular programs so that the money goes directly to these programs. Districts are allowed to spend their money, their block grant, any way they choose to. So we've chosen to fund these off-model. And one of the key things to the programs, they'll get a good look when we do recalibration, which will be after the next session in 2010. We're required by the Supreme Court to recalibrate every 5 years. So we'll have another look at all these in the recalibration process in 2010.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation to Senate File 56, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 56 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 128. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 128, sponsored by Senator Meyer, Scrap Metal Purchases, an act relating to junk dealers. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I would move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 128, and that further reading of the bill be dispensed with. Mr. Chairman, doing the outstanding work of Committee Number 9, we have combined two pieces of junk and now made them into one piece of junk. Mr. Chairman, I would like to have the standing committee amendment read in at this time.
Senate File 128, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the standing committee amendment to Senate File 128. I'm going to explain the amendment before I turn this over to the sponsor of the bill. Mr. Chairman, we had a bill which dealt only with beer kegs and trying to include them into the contents of junk. This bill followed, and so, again, we thought it was better if we could do it to only have one piece of legislation move forward rather than have to track two that did the same thing. And so, as you can see from the amendment, it really encompasses all of the bill, other than on line 14, you will see a metal beer keg or any recognizable part of a metal beer keg, including a beer keg made of stainless steel, whether the beer keg is damaged or not. It goes on and then pretty well lists the items and covers the remainder of all of the objects. And so what we've done is just combined those two things and to further explain what the amendment does, which is now basically the bill, I would like to call on the sponsor, Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And once in a while, I do like my bills a little on the trashy side, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Meyer.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. This particular bill was originated primarily at the behest of some of the telecommunication companies who were having a lot of trouble with theft right out of their systems or off their yards. And we brought that forward, and as soon as it hit the system, the rural electric companies came up and said, we're having the same trouble. And then we heard from contractors who would be finishing a house out in the country and wire it and put the copper pipes in one day, and the next day they'd come back, and all of that was gone. Then we heard from a center pivot dealer that said they had the same trouble with putting sprinklers up, and by the time they got the things up, they weren't even turned on, and the wire was stolen right off of the pipes. So what this is attempting to do is to update our junk or salvage statutes to provide for some reporting and some more specific reporting so that when these events of theft occur, then there's some ability to trace back to the junk dealer basically how much was sold, when was it sold, what was sold to them, specifically who sold it, and so there can be some law enforcement to go along with it. The other thing it does is it limits the amount of cash transactions that can occur because people that steal stuff really like to get it in cash, so there's no records. This limits it to a $100 cash transaction in 72 hours. Then you can do it again, but price of gas gets up there, you won't be able to afford to deliver that $100 and come back and make any money. So you're going to be able to find out who's actually doing something. It also increases the penalty slightly. It brings in another section there, the powers of cities, towns, and counties are not impaired. It remains, that part of the statute stays the same, so cities, towns, and counties can have their own ordinances, but this makes it a misdemeanor, and it pops it up to not less than 50 to 200 or not more than 60 days, the first offense, and then second offense, it's at $300 and not less than 30 nor more than 90. So that's the basis for the bill, the reason for it. Like I said, it just it makes things more specific so law enforcement can track it. And with that explanation, I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Von Flatern, we're still on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Have you moved that?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on the Standing Committee Amendment, the new 3318107 on beer kegs, lines 10 through 18, it looks to me like this is just an absolute prohibition. Can we have a little word of explanation? And what does a beer distributor who winds up with a keg of his that's damaged supposed to do?
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the beer keg, that was a bill that I had that actually passed out of committee. We combined them. The testimony and the evidence is that the manufacturers basically own the beer kegs. And what is happening, and I don't have the pictures, but they were distributed in the committee, trucks loaded up with beer kegs that are not theirs, and then they sell those to these junk dealers for the money. And ultimately, it's a big problem for these companies. And so that's hopefully that's answered your question.
Senator Cooper.
The testimony that we had received in the committee to the Senate was that actually the good senator from Natrona County was correct. These actually are controlled, and all of them end up in one place in Wisconsin, and that's where they all go, and that's where they go to repair them, they go to destroy them, whatever they need to do with them, and that's how all beer kegs in this country apparently are handled.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, in committee, we had no negative testimony against this bill. Even some of the recyclers and what did we change the name to, salvage people, had no objection with it. But I'm going to say in all fairness, it could have been because they were not aware of what was going on. I have had, as maybe some of you had, several emails since the bill passed out talking about how restrictive this is going to be and what a burden it's going to place on their operations having to keep these kind of records. Now, you can make the decision which is the most important, record keeping that they're, and it is kind of onerous if you have that. One lady sent an email in saying the only one there is her husband, and now he's got to do some bookkeeping and keep a book and keep a log, and I think that could be significant. However, the theft of all of this kind of stuff is becoming prevalent throughout the country, and so I think you need to weigh that. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to call for the question on the amendment, which basically is the bill.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 128, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 128 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the sponsor, a question on the first page under, starting with line 13. Well, line 14 at the end says, shall keep a book in which shall be written in ink. And then if you follow that over the next page, it says, in the English language. And then line 3 and 4 talks about, shall be erased, mutilated, shall not be erased, mutilated, or changed. Did anybody talk about possibly updating that a little bit? It seems pretty obvious that written in ink is possibly not used these days.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, that is actually current language. We do add some language over on page 2, lines 8 through 9, that keep and create a written or electronic record. Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can track this through, I don't believe that part is deleted, which there could be some cleanup on second reading. To make sure that we could add that to the first one or to make sure that it tracks with the second one, and I can get with LSO to see if there's anything we need to do there. But currently junk dealers are required to keep the the records, but it's not the specific type of record. So the as far as it being onerous, all it is just making sure that it's specific whether they're whether the metal is a brass or a different kind of metal.
Mr. President.
The sponsor of the committee have any information on what our surrounding states are doing? Because I see this, if our surrounding states don't have similar legislation, all we're doing is just encouraging it to go out of state. We're probably not really helping the problem of stealing. So I was wondering if they had any information on the surrounding states.
Senator Meyer.
Anecdotal, and this was from the people that asked us to bring the legislation. What they had told us is that the surrounding states are more restrictive, more along this lines, and that rather than people from Wyoming going outside and trying the theft outside of the state, we're actually driving people into Wyoming, and that we're in the center of states that are more restrictive. So we're trying to keep up, I guess, with the other states. We can get some specific language from the other states, ask LSO or maybe NCSL to look at that, but anecdotally, that's the information that we've received.
Ready for the question? All in favor of Senator Larson's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 128, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 128 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 14, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Historic Sites Appropriation, an act relating to cultural heritage tourism and state historic sites. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 14. There is a standing Committee Number 1 amendment. I'd ask it to be read in.
Senate File 14, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this is an interim work by the Joint Travel Committee. I'll turn it over to the chairman to talk about it, but in their interim work, they've been having an ongoing effort to look at what we can do to enhance our historic sites throughout the state. They had made recommendations for fairly large appropriation. And the JAC, frankly, has been looking at parks and our systems and the historic facilities throughout the years. We've actually applied a lot of money into their roads. We've put a lot of money into their upgrades. We've put them into the major maintenance allocation formula now with the state. We're bringing them back in. The JAC did recommend a reduced amount of funding, a total of $1 million to be utilized, with $331 going to Fort Fred Steele, which was their highest priority. The Piedmont kilns, they were afraid that if they did spend some money on that they would lose those kilns forever, so we recommended $100,000 there. We recommended $219,000 for improvements to the Carissa facility mine. That's just to take electrical service out to the some of the new sites. And finally, $350,000 for improvements to the interpretation and at the department's historical and archaeological sites. So, Mr. Chairman, it's JAC recommends $1 million in funding instead of the larger sum requested by the interim committee. With that, I'd urge your support of the amendment.
Senator Nichols, would you like to move the amendment?
I apologize. I thought I did, and I will do that. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 14 and urge your support.
Discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion that the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 14 pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 14 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr.
Mr. Chairman, when the Travel, Recreation, Wildlife Committee met, one of the interim topics during the interim, one of the topics it was tasked with was dealing with state parks and historic sites. And one of the things we really want to put our eyes on, this legislature has been generous in its funding to various state parks and historic sites over the last few years. And all this, frankly, enhances tourism, and tourism is the number two industry in the state of Wyoming. One of the things we turned our attention to were those monuments and historic sites that are not manned. They just don't have enough people, or they aren't big enough, or they aren't in good enough condition. And I'll go through them real quick because they're spread all over the state. Ames Monument, the Fetterman Fight Site, Fort Fetterman, Fort Fred Steele, Fort Reno, Fort Supply, the Granger State Station, Independence Rock, Legend Rock, Names Hill, Oregon Trail Ruts, Piedmont Charcoal Kilns, Platte River Crossing, Point of Rock Stage Station, Register Cliff, and the Wagon Box Fight. And, Mr. Chairman, between those and a number of the other sites that the chairman of the Appropriations Committee mentioned, we were looking at the idea of, in some cases, restoring these some of these sites, trying to bring them back close to what they were like before, in some cases actually preserving them to keep them from falling in. And two good examples are two of the buildings at Fort Fred Steele are in terrible shape and in danger of collapsing, and also the chairman of the Appropriations Committee mentioned the Piedmont Kilns. Anybody who's not been down to these kilns, they're really something to see, and it turns out they may well be the only complete kilns with the tops and everything still on them left in the country. And we need $100,000 to restore those and stabilize them and make sure that they stay the way they are. The bulk of the appropriation from the original bill was for about $9 million for a new visitor center up at South Pass City. And as has happened to a number of us, a lot of these requests and appropriations and bills were approved during the summer when the fiscal position of the state was a lot better and a lot different than it is now. So I think that the Appropriations Committee did the responsible thing in cutting back on the appropriations to where they are, and I ask that the Committee of the Whole render favorable consideration to this bill. Thank you.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if the committee could provide a printout or fact sheet or something on how much the state has spent on the Carissa mine since we first took it over and bought it between its inception and now.
Senator Burns.
We can certainly do that. Would the good chairman of the Minerals Committee like it just for himself or like a copy distributed on the floor?
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm only speaking for myself, but I would assume that other people would be interested in that, so I'd suggest you distribute it on the floor.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to do that, and I'd like at this moment to take into consideration the fact that Carissa Mine, combined with South Pass City, because they're all at one spot, is in the process of becoming, frankly, a world-class site on a par with a UN heritage site.
Senator Nicholas.
And we have that. We actually asked the same question, and we have the spreadsheet, and we're happy to share it.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation to Senate File 14, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 14 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 17. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File Number 17, sponsored by the Mental Health Committee. Mental Health and Substance Abuse Appropriations, an act relating to mental health and substance abuse services. It was referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 17. There is a standing committee amendment. If you could please read it in.
Senate File 17, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, lines 10 through 16.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 17. Folks, our Select Committee on Mental Health and Substance Abuse during the interim continued their work to expand the mental health services throughout the state. After reviewing the total package, the JAC recommended a portion of the package. What we recommended was additional funding for the mental health crisis stabilization beds. The parts that we recommended are over on page 6 of your bill. That's where we created funds to expand and to create one more regional center for crisis beds in the Bighorn County. It would be called the northwest part of the state. And in addition, over on page 7 of the bill, there was an underfunding in an existing program as a result of a mistake. They were underfunded by $458,000. Department testified they had $310,000 available from funds that they diverted from the state hospital. We're requiring them to use the $310,000, and then we supplement that by $148,000 to meet that obligation. So JAC recommendations first fully funds the existing regional in the southeast part of the state, creates one more region funding for that. The total funding runs about $900,000. That will get biennialized to about $1.8 million. It's a big-ticket item. With that, I'd urge your support of the amendment, and if you have technical questions, I'd probably turn it over to the Senator Schiffer for any questions.
Heard of the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to Standing Committee Member Number 1 to Senate File 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Member Number 1 to Senate File 17 has passed. We're back on the bill. Question on the bill?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation to Senate File 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 17 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 28. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 28, Licensing of Entertainment Activities, sponsored by Senator Case, an act relating to licensing of specified entertainment activities. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let it be known that I'm for entertainment. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 28. There are no amendments. Basically, this is a bill that goes in. You know how you talk to folks back home and they say, every time you pass a law, you ought to take a law off the books. This is your chance to take a couple of those old laws off the books. What we're actually doing is going in and removing the specific regulatory authority regarding pool halls, bowling alleys, and we're going to catch in another place, dance halls. So if you're upset about pool halls, bowling alleys, and dance halls, this may not be the bill for you, but what we do is go into two places. One is under the powers of municipalities, which even though we have a home rule statute or a home rule section of the Wyoming Constitution, the legislature continues to enumerate the powers of municipalities. It's located in 15.1.103. That's just about a four-page list of powers that municipalities have. You'll see that it's quite extensive, but you back this up even with their home rule powers. But of course, one of the powers that they have is to regulate license tax or prohibit saloons, pool halls, any tables kept for hire, bowling alleys, and shooting galleries or places, and it goes on to talk about gambling houses, prostitution. I didn't mess with that, but I thought about it. I figured that when I went through this list that saloons, Mr. Chairman, that's obviously something that local licensing authorities need to do because of we're a control state and we regulate liquor licenses. Pool halls is one I took out. Any tables kept for hire, I think that might be gambling, and I didn't want to take away the municipality's authority for gambling, even though gambling is not permitted in Wyoming except for on the Wind River Indian Reservation and a few other exceptions. Bowling alleys, you still have to have a specific authority to have bowling alleys. I took that out. There's another one called shooting galleries, which I considered taking out, Mr. Chairman, but I don't know what a shooting gallery is. In the old days, a shooting gallery was one of those things where you had like a BB gun and you would shoot things off a wall like at a carnival and things. But it could also be involve firearms and use of firearm in a municipality. So I left it alone. Okay. Now you go to the repealers, which is on the next page of the bill. And we're looking at 336108. And this is where it really gets colorful, Mr. Chairman. 33.6 is under the section of, it's called carnivals, circuses, pawnbrokers, pool rooms, and bowling alleys. Hooray! And we're going in specifically to 108, and that is the section that is about pool rooms and bowling alleys, and removing that from our law. Free market's going to prevail on pool rooms and bowling alleys. Mr. Chairman, the next one is under Chapter 13. This is an entire chapter, 101 through 105, which is devoted to dance hall operators. Now, that's an exciting topic. We're not talking about bars and saloons that have music. That's under a different area. This is just an establishment that provides for dancing, and that ought to be a law. And if you want to establish a dance hall in Wyoming, Mr. Chairman, you need to do this. Any person, firm, or corporation conducting a public dance hall or a place at which the public genuinely are invited to assemble for dancing, situated outside the limits of an incorporated city or town, shall be required to pay a license fee of $50 per annum to the county in which said dance hall may be located. But before any license shall be issued to any person, firm, or corporation to operate any such dance hall or public place, and such parties shall file in the office of the county clerk at least 10 days prior to its consideration by the Board of County Commissioners a petition and an application which shall accurately describe the location where said dance hall or public place is proposed to be operated, the name of the person, firm, or corporation proposing to operate it, and a petition signed by a majority of the qualified resident electors who reside within 2 miles of said location. That's old law. I guess that was when dancing wasn't what it is today, or I'm not sure. And Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is repeal some of that old, wonderful, colorful statute, but it's law that we really shouldn't have on the books because it's not anything we enforce, nor is needed today. No one testified against the bill. We did have a little bit of a discussion about shooting galleries, and honestly, we did have a discussion about home rule for municipalities. But I do point out that if you go back to your municipal law, you'll find that there are some very, very broad powers for municipalities which would allow them to take care of nuisances that they would see fit, including a section that's still in law that allows them to license, tax, and regulate any business whatsoever. And then farther down, the authority to suppress or prohibit gambling, prostitution, or other disorderly and vicious practices or conduct. And I'm not taking away. Vicidious? Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. Be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if dancing's outlawed, only outlaws will be dancing. But I do have a question. Was there any discussion in the committee since we're taking away the licensing authority by the counties and the cities? Was there any discussion of backfill for the lost revenue?
You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 28, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 28 has passed. Committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 104. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 104, sponsored by Senator Johnson. Life insurance limitation on dependent coverage and act relating to group life insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 104. And I got to remember who I'm yielding to on this bill. I'm going to yield to Senator Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case, do you wish to have the Standing Committee amendment read in and moved?
Let's do that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Senate File Number 104, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
And Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 104. I let Senator Johnson explain the amendment and the bill.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was asked to do this because when the life insurance industry looked at it, nobody knew why the amount of insurance for any covered spouse or dependent child under the policy shall not exceed 50%. That was a 1980s statute. Before that, it was limited to $2,500. And so they came and asked that I sponsor it and take that out so that the market could handle how much insurance spouses and children could have on group insurance programs. And then when the committee was talking about it, my long, lanky good friend from Natrona County looked at it and he said, why not just delete three little I, lines 4 through 7, on page 2, and nobody could come up for a reason why not just to delete the whole thing. And that amendment passed. So that's a simple explanation for the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like at this time I'll answer questions, but I hope they'll pass it.
Ready for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 104, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 104 has passed. Back on the bill, Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's just let the market handle the and contractual agreements handle group insurance with the employee, their children, and their spouses.
Further the question? Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, just with the amendment that was just approved, I'm just wondering, and we don't have the entire thing, but ultimately, since subsection A on page 1 is discretionary, says that group life insurance may be extended to insure employees or members of the classes. Why do we need that now? I mean, ultimately, if they may, it doesn't mean they have to. So why do we need that paragraph, or is there something else in the statute?
Senator Case?
Only repealing the three little I. There's other sections there. I can't tell you what they are off the top of my head, but we can get it. But there are requirements in there that we did not intend to repeal because we wanted to focus just on what the bill did.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation to Senate File 104, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 104 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Fine job. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Reading clerk, read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate file 92, do pass, amended. Senate file 111, do pass. Senate file 56, do pass. Senate file 128, do pass, amended. Senate file 14, do pass, amended. Senate File 17, do pass, amended. Senate File 28, do pass. And Senate File 104, do pass, amended. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The report is adopted. Reports from standing committees.
January the 30th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 67, reports back with a recommendation that it do not pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 30th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 136, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 30th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 132, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 30th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 137, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 30th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 20, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, excuse, Senator Burns, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 30th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 19, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I make the motion, I'd just like to say, what a good job the body has done all week, both in Committee of the Whole and in your standing committees. Today ends day 14. We have about somewhere over 50 bills, Senate files, that are still in committee. Last day for Committee of the Whole, House of Origin, is day 20. You can do your own math, but the way I perceive that, it's you're doing very well, doing very well. Aside from the bills that we worked on today, there's probably 7 or 8 Senate files that are available to put up, and I'll have those up for you to work on Monday. There'll be others being reported out of committee, certainly after you work today and Monday morning. I will say again that there's a good number of House bills out there. However, as long as there is a Senate file to be put up, I'll put Senate files up, and in the event there's no Senate file available, I would move a House bill up. I will probably not continue to post the House bills as next day bills. You have a sheet now that you can track that on and you can kind of see that. There were some pretty significant bills reported out of committee today, both out of labor, judiciary, and appropriations. Moving rapidly again, those will be the bills that you'll see on the board on Monday. If and for some reason you're not ready for those, and I know some of those bills do take some preparations, don't hesitate to ask me to take it down. Don't hesitate to ask that it be laid back. Having said that, I would like to leave you with a thought as we go through some of the difficult debate and some of the discussion. It's one that I use often. Perhaps you've heard it before. I don't claim any originality. It says it's not failure that we should fear, but we should fear most being successful at those things that don't really matter. And so as we go forth in this session, I hope that we deal with those things that are really important and those things that really matter. It's always the inclination of a teacher to reward good work with more work. I won't do that today. You've worked well. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 o'clock Monday morning.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning in the committee room at 7 a.m. We'll start with the bills we couldn't get through today that were on our schedule. Senate File 141, Midwives Licensure. Senate File 66, Medicaid Foot Care. Senate File 18, Mental Injury Workers' Compensation. Then we'll do Senate File 129, Juvenile Justice Amendments. And then, presuming time permits, we'll come back to Senate File 93, Oral Health Initiative, where I understand there'll be a significant amendment.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in the Hersler Building, room B63, at 8 o'clock to consider the following bills: House Bill 57, Ownership of Pore Space, Dominance of the Mineral Estate; House Bill 58, Responsibilities of Injectors and Pore Space Owners; and House Bill 80, Engrossed Sequestration Site Unitization.
Senator Von Pleteren.
Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet upon adjournment Monday to discuss Senate File 134, House Embossed License Plates; House Bill 25, Special License Plate Retention by Spouse; House Bill 107, Engrossed Stop School Bus; and if time permits, Senate File 143, Marking Structures That Obstruct Flight.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 12:30 in S18 to discuss Senate File 135, Risk Management; Senate Joint Resolution 5, Hydraulic Fracturing; and House Bill 34, Liquor License Industry Representatives. Further, Mr. Chairman, we will meet on Monday at 30 minutes after adjournment to do a variety of House bills, which will be posted very soon.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet immediately following our adjournment today to complete our work from this morning, which includes consideration of Senate File 106, Medication Disposal Program, and Senate File 99, Career and Technical Training Grants. The committee will meet on Monday at 1 p.m. to consider Senate File 39, Child Health Insurance Program, and Senate File 108, Long-Term Care Facilities. We'll meet upon adjournment on Monday in room 204 to consider Senate File 138, Healthcare Professional Database, and Senate File 146, In-Car Supercomputer Funding. Thank you.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. in S19. We'll take up and continue our discussion of Senate File 118, Continuance of Insurance Coverage; House Joint Resolution 3, Legislators' Term of Office; House Bill 9, Engrossed Subdivisions Cluster Developments; House Bill 10, Engrossed Subdivisions Requirements.
Okay. You've heard the motion that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday morning, February 2nd. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is adjourned.